Hello, everybody. Welcome to show number 400 of the Paddock Pass podcast. Dave, did you ever think you'd live this long to reach number 400 in the Paddock Pass podcast?
If memory serves, show number one was recorded in Jerez, so it actually makes sense. I think Steve English,
What year was it?
15.
Yeah, it would have been 15. Yeah. Yeah.
Hashtag 2015.
Yeah.
Hashtag. Had to get it in there.
Exactly. Can't really have a podcast, especially not like one with a nice round number, without mentioning 2015.
Well, we're sitting here in the press conference room, which is now empty and stripped of all the fancy lighting and background that goes on here at the Grand Premio de España. I'm Adam Wheeler, as always, joined by Mr. David Emmett. A great pleasure. And Dave, I've been feeding off your energy, being back your first appearance at a Grand Prix this year. It's been quite marvellous having you sat next to me in the press room, I have
to
say.
Are you
sure? it has been very pleasant to be back in the press room. I have been, because I'm still sort of easing my way back in. So I've been rocking up sort of about halfway through Moto2. So, yeah, I have not been first into the track. This morning, though, I mean, we'll talk about sort of like crowd and things later on, but this morning I came in quite late after the MotoGP warm-up, and coming from the north, you come in through a separate road, so that you don't, there's not much actual car traffic there, and then you come up to the roundabout just outside the circuit, and that's where basically they've taken all the motorcycles. So I was literally surrounded by hundreds, if not thousands, of motorcycles, and it was absolutely amazing. It was also terrifying, because you're in a car and they are coming around left and right, and everyone's going very, very slowly, so it's all sort of like, you know, walking pace, but it's just sensational. The atmosphere is just sensational.
So you're in the middle of a Mad Max movie. Were you jealous, or were you?
Yes. Go to a motorbike race on a motorbike. It's something very, very special.
Well, seeing the amount you carry, I still find it hard to believe you actually come to a MotoGP race on a motorcycle.
Yeah, well, that's why I've got such big panniers.
And the new voice of cynicism, the new level of cynicism on the Paddock Pass podcast. Hello, Neil.
Hello. I mean, I'm among friends, really, in that department, I think.
Yeah, in good company, that's for sure. Neil, I'm going to come straight to you. What was your grade for this fine Grand Prix?
10.
Yeah,
I'm giving it a 10.
I said at the start of the season we have to be more realistic with the grades.
Realistic, we had a mental sprint race. It was cocoa bananas crazy. And we had a race for the ages today in MotoGP. We had lovely weather, fantastic venue, sold out, capacity crowd. What was not to love? It was MotoGP. It was MotoGP at its finest.
And an interesting Moto2 race and a really tense Moto3 race. I really enjoyed Moto3. In fact, I was getting a lot of grief from the two of you from the fact that I actually enjoyed the Moto3 race.
The fact that you're a massive hypocrite.
Yeah, who was first in the press conference to ask a question? Not only was in the Moto3 press conference, he was actively engaging. I couldn't quite believe it.
Well, yeah, but I mean, it was that felt like a proper race. That felt like a proper race.
Let's queue up the Moto3 round from Qatar last year and play it back to all our listeners.
Yeah, we're getting a bike started behind us. We're recording this on Sunday evening, and the mechanics and the team's obviously still hard at work. We've got a busy day of testing, 10 a.m. till 6 p.m. tomorrow, Dave?
Yeah, and then 10 minutes of practice starts.
Just quickly, who do you think's going to be busier this evening trying to get shit together for tomorrow?
That's a really, really good question. I think Honda. I think Honda and Yamaha. I think the Japanese factories have the most to test, but they really need the most to gain. I think Ducati are fairly reasonably well sorted. What you're going to see with Ducati and probably also Aprilia is they need to fix this chatter problem. KTM to an extent as well, but I understand that there's some. We are going to see a fair amount of funky stuff from lots of manufacturers tomorrow.
Alesh teased the fact that Aprilia will have something big to show off. So that's, you know, this is not just like work. I mean, there might be riders, for example, like Augusto Fernandez working on base setting, but then there could be some juicy stuff, like you say, appearing out of boxes. But Neil, I mean, you said you gave the Grand Prix a 10. you were very sort of effusive in your positivity, maybe because I called you a cynic. So I apologise for that and for making you, you know, veer so heavily towards the other side. Dave, what was your grade for the Spanish Grand Prix?
Nine and a half, just so I don't get any grief from you for giving it a 10.
Well, wasn't it ruined by the weather?
No, it was made...
Not ruined, but...
No, the weather added a little bit. I mean... it wasn't ruined. Ruined is the wrong word.
Yeah,
it was. It was
influenced.
It was stimulated. Very heavily. Yeah, it was very heavily influenced. But that added an extra layer of excitement and interest in the things that are going on, like the fact that we had all of a sudden we had tyre pressure penalties, a whole bunch of them, and we haven't had any so far.
What was your grade, Ad?
Well, I was going to say, Dave was getting all excited over horniness and wet patches in our note show yesterday. So I think now to start getting all, you know, innuendo-ish is probably at the wrong time. I'm going to give it a good 8.5. You know, I think, I mean, it was a record attendance, almost 300,000 people for the weekend.
We're going to have to discuss this later on.
Yeah, do we have to take that with a pinch of salt.
But a pinch?
A bucket.
Right, okay. But, you know, there was that fantastic TV image, wasn't there, this morning at 6:30 a.m., you know, of like turns 9, 10 and 11, that whole section in the dark and already full of fans. I mean, that's just something part of Jerez. Yeah. And we probably say it every year because it's just an identifiable mark of this particular Grand Prix. But, Neil, you're on the money. It was another very memorable race. We've only had four so far this season and it's already rivaling, goodness, the last one for, like, you know, the best Grand Prix we've seen so far this year. But, and, you know, gives us a load of talking points as if the sprint wasn't hectic enough yesterday. So, yeah, I'll give it an 8.5. But I just have this nagging feeling that we're going to get a bit more of this. You know, we're going to get a bit more argy-bargy.
That would be easy. All Neil will have to do is give it 11 and then a 12 and a 57 out of 10 at some point.
Not averse to turning it up to 11.
Yeah, you're a Spinal Tap man. I can see it's just, you know, part of your soul. So there we go. Guys, a reminder, of course, that we're very thankfully backed by Renthal.com. So if you have a street bike and you're after an accessory, you want to upgrade your ride in some way, then just head to Renthal.com because there's loads of options to check out and have a look at there. We've done our grades for the Grand Prix. Let's dip into our moments. I mean, what was the sort of the piece of action that stood out most? I'll go first on this one. I just love the first lap and Bagnaia's braking attempt and passing two riders on the outside into turn six, the Pedrosa corner. It was ballsy right at the beginning of the race. And, you know, it kind of set the template really for an absolutely astonishing performance from the world champion, making it three wins in a row, four in a row for the Ducati Lenovo team here at this circuit. And, you know, put him right back into the hunt for the championship when, after the sprint yesterday, we were wondering if his season was going to sort of topple off into some sort of wilderness for a while. So, I think it was quite a distinctive.
Yeah, and even Jorge Martin was impressed. He couldn't believe that, you know, Peke actually managed to get the bike stopped because he did take both Martin and Bezzecchi sort of into around the outside into dry sack, and that is an incredibly ballsy move. Just fantastic. Then from that point you knew, okay, Pecco is serious.
Yeah, Martin's attempt to try and copy it didn't work too well, did it? So Neil, your moment?
Well, you mentioned Martin's attempt to copy it. That was my moment because on Saturday we were rightly effusive in our praise of Jorge Martin about his measured approach this year, about how his bad days were fourth place in Austin and how he was always on the podium. It was a new him. He wasn't making mistakes and he binned it, chucked it out of the lead, breaking down into turn six with Pecco hot on his heels. He did admit afterwards that he was trying to break Bagnaia at that point to try and pull away and establish a proper gap there. But yeah, he was at a complete loss to explain what just happened there. It was quite worrying, really, because I think those are the worst types of crashes for riders to have, where they can't explain them. They don't really know what caused the incident. And it really closes the championship up, because had Martin won today, I really think you would start thinking, not he's the champion, but he's going to be very hard to catch.
It would have been nearly 50 points.
Which is a big old advantage this is the season. So the fact that he didn't bring it home, didn't score any points today, means that everything is closed right up. And I think the two men on the top of the podium, or first and second in the race, certainly showed that they have intentions of catching him and surpassing him quite soon.
Yeah, but I'm just going to call bullshit here because Jorge was saying, "Oh, I don't understand it. I don't know how it happened. I braked in the same place. It was exactly the same." And then if you actually watch it from the helicopter shot and Pekka Munyaya's onboard shot, you can see when he starts braking, that bike is starting to go sideways. You can see how much force he's putting into it. There was no way he was going to make that corner. It was a human error. This is very reminiscent of Pekka Bagnaia at Austin last year. I don't understand what happened, but what happened was you tried to go through that corner too fast. And in Martin's case, you tried to brake it. You just outbraked yourself and lost the front. It's as simple as that. But it's one of those where it's an ego thing. I think by the time we get to Le Mans, then he'll say, well, maybe I was taking a little bit too much risk or something. But I think he knows exactly what he did wrong, but he just doesn't want to cope with it at the moment because it was such an egregious mistake.
We'll come back to the Pramac rider in a minute, Dave, but just give us your moment from today this weekend.
My moment was actually this morning in the warm-up, was Pedro Acosta having a big, big, big crash at turn 7, lost the front. I think it was cold this morning. There were still a few sort of like patches, but he went really fast. It was towards the end. I think there was something like 50 seconds left in the session. He tumbled through the gravel. He hit the air fence. His bike destroyed the air fence. That was a big crash. It was his first proper big crash. Like he's had one crash before. This was a big one. This is the.
Well, he crashed trying to get pole position on Saturday, and yes. Then he had a fall. I think was it at
Portimao.
Yeah. So.
But they'd been sort of like more normal ones. This was a MotoGP crash.
Yeah.
This
Welcome is one to of MotoGP.
Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Exactly. And he's been sort of on this cloud. And he's just been outstanding, but he's been on this cloud, and I think this is the kind of crash that will make him a better one because it'll have scared him, it'll have shaken him up, it'll make him think that little bit more, and I think it's going to be important.
Yeah, and he spent all of that session chasing Pecco down in warm up, and then he just got past Pecco when he had that crash. So there was a little bit of him maybe trying to show, look, I kind of know my way around here. Maybe just a tiny little bit of arrogance there as well, trying to pull a bit of a gap ahead to the world champion behind.
It was a confidence checker, that's for sure. And yep. I think as much as they say he was unhurt and it didn't really affect his race preparation, it must have done because he was quite conservative then at the start on the first lap. I think he was as low as 17th or 18th on the first lap and then pulled his way back to 10th.
Yeah, he also said that he had to use his other bike for the race, and it was the first start on that clutch. And even though these bikes are always completely identical, things like clutch actuation, the riders can tell the difference between like one start and the next because, you know, the clutch feels slightly different. It's biting in a very, very slightly different way, different point, you know, different feel. And that, I think, was a reason he had. I mean, you know, he said that was a reason for him to not get such a great start. So, yeah, I think it did have an effect. I think it sort of, it took him a little while because the other thing is it was immediately red flag, so he didn't get a chance to get back on the bike and ride out. He had to wait for the sighting lap. So,
Before we sort of move on to our talking points, I just want to very briefly go over the fact that something we were talking about in the note show on Patreon, that the track here is particularly porous because, you know, the soaking that it had during the night on Friday and also Saturday morning, I think we saw still some traces of that today, yeah. Right? I mean, Danny Pedrosa said he was not pushing at all. He was not taking any other line going into turn 8. And he says when you're not pushing and you lose the front or just the bike washes away unexpectedly, then that is usually due to a track condition. And then also we saw, you know, just remnants of the track being a little bit weird. Turn 5, we saw crashes that were due to collisions and incidents, and we'll talk about those as well in a moment. But it's worth pointing out that, you know, the bad weather that we did have here at Jerez had a little bit of a bearing on some of the results today.
Yeah, the Moto3 riders, and I think also the Moto2 riders, were told on the grid, be careful, there are still a few places. I think by the time the MotoGP race started, pretty much almost everything was gone, but there might have been one or two bits where there's still a little bit of damp because the asphalt is a little bit porous. I mean, go listen to the Note Show, and I think I explain it in a little bit more depth. Also, on my Saturday night roundup, there's a bit more depth about it. Basically, the asphalt is a little bit porous in one or two places, and the water seeps up from underneath it after the very, very heavy rains. It gets pulled up by the heat, and so you get these damp patches on track.
Dave, you said in the show last week you'd like to see this Grand Prix at the end of the season. I mean, Neil, you were here working in the pandemic Grand Prix where it was like 40 degrees in May or so. Well, June, sorry.
July.
Yeah.
July.
Was it July, was it? Okay, so midsummer, the worst possible time you want to be in Andalusia. But, you know, there is, I don't know, maybe like Phillip Island, people can maybe look at this event. Okay, it was like the first wet sessions we've had in, what, 6-7 years?
Yeah, it doesn't, it's very, very rare for it to rain here. It's very, it's usually warm and it's usually dry.
Pecco versus Mark Neil. We can't avoid this subject. It was the meat of the Grand Prix, and you know, apart from an astonishing performance by Bagnaia, as we said, to go three in a row, we had the Marc Márquez that we thought could appear. And after the sprint, where that was a crash into turn nine, where yep. You know that was caused, he said, reiterated that fact again today, it was because of the track. He just went for it today.
Yeah, he did. He absolutely did. I mean, he didn't go for it in the first couple of laps, and I think that was kind of critical. I think Mark, well, I spoke to Mark Scrucci, Frankie Carchetti, after the race, and he said that basically they had banked on Mark getting into the lead immediately, so they had set the tire pressure for that. When he got stuck behind three other riders and was fourth behind Martin, Bagnaia and Bezzecchi, his front tire pressure was skyrocketing, something he had to manage. Also, he said he was a little bit, he was riding with trepidation after what happened yesterday, also what happened in Kota. Understandably, he didn't want to risk too much too early on. But then once he got past Bezzecchi, that was sort of the moment that he really clicked in. And he was saying in the press conference after the race that when he was catching Bagnaia, he just had this wonderful flow, which told us really that he's in such a short space of time, he's yeah. basically got completely up to speed with the Ducati. And it was magnificent watching how he just tore into Bagnaia's lead. I thought it was also wonderful how Bagnaia was anticipating Márquez coming and his reaction to Márquez coming through, because I was of the opinion that Mark would get through and that was it, the race was run. But Bagnaia points back immediately, and I think the next lap the same thing happened at turn nine, and Bagnaia responded again, and then he put in his fastest lap and immediately sort of gapped him to the extent of 0.5, 0.6, and it was just like, wow. What a response. So it was magnificent seeing Mark, but it was also magnificent seeing Pecco muster that response. And, you know, the world champion, a doubled world champion now, I still feel that Pecco isn't quite valued for the rider that he is. I still think he's a little bit underappreciated. Up against a guy that's a six-time MotoGP champion, coming back to full strength after so many years in the wilderness, it just had the feel of one of those real heavyweight MotoGP duels. And it was great. It was absolutely fantastic. We only had two sort of moments where they were clashing, but the drama there was just stupendous. And this was on the biggest stage at Jerez, the Spanish Grand Prix. And it was magnificent to watch.
More than Casey Stoner, more than Loris Caparossi, more than Andrea Dovizioso, I think Bagnaia has shown that he is the most apt and most efficient Ducati rider that there is, you know, since they came back to the Premier Class, what, exact 21 years ago. So, I mean, you summed up beautifully there, Neil. I just thought it's quite poetic, Dave, where you have Marc Márquez on Bagnaia's old bike, and then he was kind of carrying different lines as well around sections of the track. Yeah. He was a bit tighter. He seems to be getting the kind of characteristic of the Ducati quite nicely, where he was standing up and really getting the power onto the ground. And he was describing afterwards how the Ducati is the best bike at the most circuits. And, you know, he's really finding his rhythm in it. But the crash again yesterday in the sprint was caused by the track, not from him pushing the limits. So he was insinuating that there's still some margin for him to get into that Honda mode of like, I'm going right to the edge. Oh, I've crashed. There's the edge. Now I know where it is. And I'm going to, you know, just blow you all away when it comes to the actual race itself.
Yeah, I mean, there's definitely much more to come. I mean, what I found interesting about the Pecco versus Mark things, the Dorna commentator Matt Burke came over to, well, he came over to chat football with you. But anyway, we were talking about, you know, the three of us talking about it, and you know, we all mentioned Aragon 21, I think, where Mark was, but it was, you know, it was Mark versus Pecco, and Matt said, you know, that was Mark versus Pecco when Pecco was clearly on a much better bike. Now, probably the 24 is a little bit better than a 23, not that much better. This was two people on pretty well matched bikes, and Pecco was still given as good as he, you know, as good as he got. Pecco understands that the only way you can beat Mark is to, once he comes past, you come straight through. Otherwise, you're lost. And I genuinely think Mark was enjoying getting Pecco's front tire painted all over his leathers. He looked to be enjoying it. But the other thing is that I think both of them really wanted it. That was the best thing about this. Both of them really wanted it. Pecco needed this win. He really, really needed this win to get the championship back on, back sort of, you know, on the rails. Mark really needed to show, like, okay, this is me. I can do this. I can put the bike where I need to. Because the way he ran Pecco down was very impressive, and you know, the passes he was putting on them were outstanding. When he went through nine, he was opening the door, and it was Pecco's brilliance, because this is where I think Pecco is strong. He understands where riders are going to pass him, and he
retaliates.
He anticipates. Right, okay, right, I know you're going to try there, but if you do that, then what I need to do is do that so I can come back. And that was what he did to Mark, and it was just outstanding.
Yeah, I think this showed that once again you see the best of Pecco when he's properly backed up against the wall. We saw it toward the end of 22 at Sepang. We saw it at the end of 23 last year at Valencia. He can, in really real crunch moments, he can really deliver. And yesterday, just think back to what we were saying on the note show, we were not writing him off, but we were saying, I mean, that crash with Binder has come at a really bad time. He's had issues in Portimao. His racecraft was called into question after the incident with Mark. He had a bad race in Kota, very subdued, and then taken out of the sprint yesterday, qualified back in seventh. I mean, Mark on pole. There's a lot of things there lining up where you were thinking this is going to be a pretty tough weekend for Pecco, and he could come away here 50, 60 points back in the championship. But again, he's shown a massive reaction, and has shown that he is sort of, he's kind of, I mean, he's
a champion.
Yeah, he's a champion, yeah. And he's kind of up in his game with this fight that Mark is bringing.
Which is what a true champion gets better. You know, they win their first championship, and we saw that last year in his second championship, because he was so much better in his second championship, and Jorge Martin pushed him really, really hard. And you can see him growing again and again. And I'm really looking forward to the rest of the season, Mark versus Pecco, because that's going to happen a lot. There's going to be a lot more things happening, but yeah, Mark first. With Mark coming, Pecco is going to have to up his game again, and that's really going to be interesting.
Just to wrap it, I mean, we were excited pre-season because we knew that Bagnaia was the world champion and Marquez was getting on the same technical platform, but I think there's now another layer to the excitement, because Bagnaia is clearly at the peak of his powers with this package, and Mark is still on the journey to finding, like we said, the boundaries of it. So when that kind of clash happens in the future, and whether it's Aragon or whether it's Le Mans, or, you know, maybe somewhere even more exciting like Sachsenring, then its sparks are going to fly.
Yeah, absolutely. And just one other thing that Mark's crew chief Frankie Crackhead said after the race, he was of the opinion that if Mark passed Pecco for the first time in the stadium section and held it, then he was home and dry. But the fact that Pecco got back in front meant that Mark's front tire pressure went up again. He said it was very clear on the data looking at the front tire pressure. And that, obviously, Pecco responded brilliantly, but Mark then had to sort of manage the front tire pressure rocketing up. And that is why maybe wasn't able to get close enough on the last lap to make a pass or try and attempt a pass. Obviously, part of that was down to Bagnaia's brilliant response. But yeah, Carcetti was of the opinion the speed is there. It's just about managing the very finer details. And to be at that stage, just four rounds in, I think is very, very promising.
Neil, you're a busy man after the race, because you also got to talk to Ducati Lenovo team manager Davide Tardozzi. We didn't get a heart rate monitor on him for this Grand Prix, but it would have been interesting. You know, some his facial expressions alone when they cut to him in the pit lane is kind of interesting. So, here's what Davide had to say.
So I'm here with Davide Tardozzi. Davide, I think we can all agree that that was an absolutely fantastic race. One of Pecco's best ever performances, would you say?
I think so. I think that this could be at least on the podium on his performance of his career. He did a fantastic race since the beginning, a fantastic overtake on the first lap, and an incredible lap record in the 23rd. So I think that fighting with such a champion like Marc Márquez is something that he must be happy about.
Yeah. After what happened in Austin and then what we saw in the sprint race yesterday, is it fair to say Pecco was under a bit of pressure starting this race?
Yesterday, I guess that he was unlucky, because I think that the podium was possible yesterday too. But anyway, today he shows that his potential, and he shows that he deserved number one on the ferry.
Yeah, and we've seen in how he's fought with Marquez so far. He does not want to let the number 93 get ahead of him on track, right? I mean, that's super clear.
Yeah. I think that so far we have on Ducati three great riders like Martin, Marquez, and Pecco, while all the others are really fighting. And also Bezzecchi today did a fantastic race. But in a way, I think that all the riders are very competitive in this championship, so I think that the fan must be very happy to have this kind of MotoGP.
Yeah. After one or two races where we saw Aprilia at the front, KTM at the front, this was another weekend where we saw Ducati just assert itself as the dominant force.
Yeah. I think that also other brands are very competitive, and it will be the leitmotiv of the championship to have one or the other brand dominating in one or other racetrack. So I think that mainly KTM and Aprilia are very, very competitive, and it will be some races where for us will be very difficult to beat them, and probably they will win.
And just one final question, Davide. Obviously, some chatter issues have been a problem for the GP24 up until now. Pecco was talking about how you guys have worked tirelessly since Austin to try and find something. I mean, it seems that it's definitely been a bit better this weekend.
It's not chatter, it's vibration is slightly different. But anyway, the engineers after Austin was deeply concentrated and focused to try to solve the problem. I think that partially we have solved, but we'll see tomorrow. We will do some tests tomorrow towards the solution of this problem.
Davide Tardozzi, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Nicely done there, Neil. Listen, let's move on to Jorge Martin. Well, let's move back to Jorge Martin and quickly scrub this one off, because you kind of touched on it earlier on. You know, we were saying he was looking very much in the mold of a champion to be, but then this was another sort of little blip like we saw in Indonesia last year, where, you know, he kind of snatched despair and disaster from the jaws of victory. What do we think, guys? I mean, Dave, you weren't particularly impressed with the explanation in the debrief.
No. I mean, that was just rider bullshit. This is again, I think there's a big difference with Indonesia last year, for example. That was hubris. That was, everything was going so perfectly that, you know, he just stopped. He thought that everything went, you know, sort of automatically, that he could do anything. This was not that. This was Buddy Pecco's there. What is he doing there? I'm going to get rid of him. I want him off my tail. And he was very determined not to have Pecco come past him again at turn six, and he was just braking later and later. And you can see you can literally see the bike move and twitch as he's braking for it. He was absolutely on the limit. You know, it's sort of like stepping out, and there's a twitch in the entire chassis, and then it just goes down. That was entirely rider error, and it was entirely pressure, I think.
Yeah, I think another you were mentioning Indonesia being hubris. I mean, he was so much faster than everyone that particular weekend. I thought fair play to Jorge today, because he actually held his hands up and said that pace that Bagnaia was doing at the end of the race was amazing, incredible. I couldn't have lived that. So I think, realistically, had he stayed on, the best he could have hoped for was a third position. But then it's up to manage that. It's up to him to manage that situation. Yep. And to understand, okay, maybe Pecco's, obviously at that stage in the race, he didn't know just how strong Bagnaia was. But yeah, you have to try and manage these situations without going so far over the limits. So it was a big blow, just because it takes all that momentum from the preseason, from the first couple of races out of his sails. And I think now both Pecco and Mark smell blood and they see, okay, you know what? He isn't the complete full championship animal now that we maybe thought he was back in Kota.
The thing is as well, though, everyone's been a bit irregular so far at the start of the season. I mean, this was Marcus's first podium, you know, since 2022. And he said it's been the worst start to a season for him in the Premier class in terms of results. Okay, we're not counting the sprints where he's been on the podium twice in four rounds. Yeah. Marquez, but I mean, you know, Bagnaia's had crashes, you know, he's had DNS, Brad Binder's had a bit of a nightmare. So there's been, you know, this kind of sporadic spread of results, and now Martin's jumped firmly into that pool. I mean, he did point out that he didn't leave this Grand Prix empty-handed. He had the 12 points from Saturday, so that was something. But you just wonder if there's any sort of little fatal flaw with him where, you know, you could get deep into the season and one or two of these things are really going to bite him in the ass.
Yeah, but we're not deep into the season. We're right at the start of the season. We were talking to Neil. We were discussing this with Neil earlier. The start of the season is always the same. You go to, because again, I mean, the reason that we're suddenly discovering chatter at places is because we went to Qatar. Qatar's a really weird track. The conditions are always weird. You know, you're riding in the day and then the night, and there's dust coming on, and they've just resurfaced, and there's a grip, and then you go to Portimao, which is really, really weird, and they don't have that much data on it, and then you go to Kota, which is a completely different kettle of fish, a very unique circuit, and then you come back here where everyone has 12 trillion laps. And that's so you start to discover, okay, all right, that's how my bike is working. And so this is why they are really starting to get into it. The season is really only just started. This is why you can't really say that we start. And there are still 629 points up for grabs.
The jury's still out on Jorge Martin and his championship credentials then. But another jury was kind of sitting through some video clips, has to be said today. And we always say, you know, is MotoGP too nice? And there was the riders were getting pretty physical, pretty aggressive with each other. It was ugly out there, Dave. I mean, we had, you know, Jack Miller and Franco Morbidelli coming into turn five, that popular corner. We also had Johann Zarco giving Pedro Acosta a little love tap, another welcome to MotoGP initiation. And then, of course, you know, Aleix Espargaró making a mistake and taking out Zarco later on. That was just two or three incidents in a plethora, really, here at Jerez.
Yeah, that was only today. If we go back to yesterday in the sprint, I mean, there's another three or four in that we can that we could pick apart if we...
It's quite a catalogue.
Yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it's a very tight track. The weird thing was, like, I think Espargaró and Zarco was for something like 17th or 16th or something. They were way, way back. And also Jack and Franco Morbidelli, maybe...
10th or 11th.
Yeah, 8th, 9th, 10th, something like that. So it's for positions a long way down there. Nobody given any penalties. Both Morbidelli and Miller and Zarco and Aleix had a talking to from Freddie Spencer. But afterwards, what was most, well, I mean, to us, I suppose, interesting was the fact that Zarco was absolutely livid with Freddie Spencer. He had absolutely no time for him. Because what Zarco was saying was like... Freddie Spencer was looking at Johann Zarco and sort of like saying, am I supposed to give him, should I give him a penalty? Pointing at Aleix Espargaró. And Zarco's going, it's not my job, it's your job to say that.
To be fair, it could have been a rhetorical question. I mean, that's my lost in translation. But I mean, like we say, Freddie Spencer's had a very busy weekend, Dave. But
yeah.
I mean, it's very weird because it was like that kind of, it's like that Spider-Man meme on Twitter, really, with lots of pointing going on in different directions at the same people. But yeah, Zarco was he was angry, wasn't he?
I mean, he was. Yeah, and it's unlike him. He is generally a very level-headed sort of a place. He's not sort of, you know, he's quite a unique and strange personality, but he's very, very level-headed. And the fact was that Aleix Espargaró said, look, at some point I just dragged him out of race direction because, like, I got in trouble with them at Qatar for after an incident with Morbidelli for shouting at race direction. I got told off, so I just dragged him out to stop him because, like, he was proper having a proper little go at them. And race direction don't really like it when you go in and shout at them.
Yeah, and if you're being restrained by Aleix Espargaró for being too emotional, then I think we can say that you've gone somewhere over the top.
Well, I mean, regardless of who's to blame and who did what and whatever else, the big issue here is that there's inconsistency. because as Joan Mir, again, someone else who was very frustrated with the system, was pointing out on Saturday, penalties are being issued or sanctions are being dealt out, and they're not kind of either fitting the crime or, you know, compared to previous incidents, they're inexplicable.
Yes. The fundamental problem, I mean, there is a little bit more of clarity. Like, for example, I think the Mir incident yesterday was a little bit more explicable because it was Mir and
Marquez.
Marquez, yeah, exactly. Marquez didn't crash. He's, you know, like, there was a collision. They came together. You can say it's a racing incident, or you can say it should have got, there should have been something. But the comparison that Mir made was with the time that he crashed and knocked someone off track.
Quartararo.
Quartararo. Last year. Yeah, exactly. At Portimao last year. But yeah, when you crash and hit someone, or you crash and almost take someone out, then you get a penalty because they're trying to stop people from crashing. So it was a little bit different, but yeah, the consistency, the lack of transparency, unfortunately, is the problem. They have got better, but there's still a long way to go.
Yeah. I think Mir, you could say he was right to be pissed off, because I think that incident caused him to drop four positions, and then Mark's penalty was to drop one. So it's like, well, you know, surely you should drop behind Mir. That should be the sort of minimum, because as Mir pointed out, if he waited a three or four more seconds, he could have just breezed by him on the start-finish strip. But that is not really Mark Marquez's MO. But I think one of the standout things from last year's race here at Jerez for the Spanish Grand Prix was some appalling stewarding decisions. You think of Fabio Quartararo getting penalised for first lap smash with Oliveira at turn two, which was not his fault at all.
Yeah, he was the person least to blame for that.
Yeah, pure race and circumstance. And then I think it was Bagnaia had to drop one position because he might have glanced Jack Miller exit in turn six. Do you remember? Had to drop a position, and it was just like, well, that's what you're doing. So they were interfering way too much this time last year. And let's be honest, it's better to have a more hands-off approach than an overly hands-on approach.
Yeah.
Yes, it's inconsistent. And yes, it must be incredibly frustrating when riders go to see Freddie Spencer and he's like, so what should I do? You know, there needs to be a bit more, I think, of maybe a figure that's more willing to confront people and accept confrontation as part of that job, something that you have to deal with as part of that job. I think that's definitely necessary, and maybe Freddie is not by nature a confrontational person, so therefore he's maybe trying to avoid that.
More diplomatic, really.
Yeah, trying to be a diplomat when in reality you've got heated athletes and team managers coming to you and shouting, and you have to have the personality to deal with that and tell them, no, this is it, this is how it goes. So I can understand from that point of view, but at the same token, better where we are now than where we were a year ago, where we thought, what are they doing? And they're ruining racing.
Yeah.
It was a chaotic day and a chaotic weekend. But as we mentioned earlier on, the atmosphere of the Grand Prix was phenomenal. And in fact, you know, there was a question in the press conference to both, you know, Pecco Bagnaia and Marquez, even Marco Bezzecchi, who I think, you know, sat through about 25 minutes of it, not answering any questions at all, because he was very much the lonely third place man out of the TV shot, didn't have much say at all in the fantastic show that we saw about the merits of the Grand Prix. And to be honest, Dave, from everything we saw over the weekend, it's quite clear that Pedro Acosta is really one of the new big stars coming up, not just for what we've seen in terms of results and his potential, but just the effects on the fan base, because you could see all those weird shark heads down in the paddock when I was down there earlier on, about an hour ago. There's still people waiting around the racetrack just to get a glimpse of him, and you know, he is the next coming.
Yeah, I mean, he is absolutely a superstar. I mean, it's, how do they do it? I mean, why is he a superstar? You don't know. He just has bags of charisma. He just oozes something which makes him sort of like attractive. You know, you want him to laugh at your jokes. You want to laugh at his jokes. He is a, he has something special. And I think, I wish he spoke just his English is really good, but I just wish he spoke a fraction better. Literally just a fraction better, a little bit, even if he just enunciated a little bit more clearly and spoke a little bit more slowly. I presume he does the same in Spanish. But he's really, he's got a lot of support, and there really were a lot of people here.
I thought it was really interesting watching the sprint podium yesterday on Saturday down at the stadium section. Jorge Martin had won the sprint race. Pedro was second. Everyone was chanting Pedro's name. Jorge was barely getting any reaction whatsoever. And when I went out this morning, I was speaking to a couple of Spanish journalists and I was asking them about this. And they were sort of saying, well, you know, Jorge just doesn't really have that sort of personality that grabs people. And they see him maybe as a little bit arrogant, a little bit cocky. And sometimes that can turn people off.
He's one with a nice car, the nice watch and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah, maybe a little bit like Jorge Lorenzo. Because Lorenzo, when, you know, he was doing his world championship winning, was never the most popular here. You have to kind of remember. Maybe it was in his later years that he gained that kind of that fame. But people were a bit turned off by some of his antics, I think, in his pomp racing-wise. Pedro by contrast, just has that sort of Midas touch of saying something which makes you think like, oh yeah, that's actually really smart. And
yeah.
On Thursday, just to finish up what I'm saying here, on Thursday he was asked, how do you keep your feet on the ground after such success? And he said, I went back to Murcia. I hung out with a couple of fishermen. Their lives are, you know, they kind of know the price of a pint of milk kind of thing. Yeah. And, you know, that sort of environment keeps me grounded. And, you know, obviously the kind of the common man or whoever it is watching the sport can kind of relate to that and think, oh yeah, he's not a superstar driving a flash car around Andorra. He's actually very similar to me.
Yeah, but I mean, look, but being grounded is so incredibly important, because you see it with the, I mean, like, you know, Marquez has won everything, made hundreds of millions, and then he would go home and his mum would give him shit, and his grandma and his granddad would ask him what he thought he was doing, and would properly put him in his place, and that really kept his feet on the ground. The same to an extent with Valentino Rossi, even though I suppose towards the end of his career he started going off a little bit, but growing up in the same village, living in the same village, having the same childhood friends around him, people who, you know, knew him when he was just a runty little, you know, scrawny little runt,
2 years ago.
But yeah, I mean, that grounds you, that gives you a sense of perspective, and it's very easy. I mean, I think a rider like Jorge Lorenzo, he never had a sense of perspective because his dad sort of brought him up to be a bit weird. So he was always going to end up being a bit weird.
Yeah, yeah. And just, you know, Acosta's coming to MotoGP, maybe is reaching a new audience to a lot of MotoGP watchers, but in Spain, he's been a superstar since 2021. He's been arguably the biggest Spanish rider with the biggest following since 2001, with the exception of Marc Márquez.
Yeah.
Not just because of his antics in the junior classes, but because of his personality, because he's a bit loud, he's a bit cheeky, he's funny. And, you know, you see kind of clips on DAZN, the Spanish broadcaster, on their YouTube channel. Acosta's always getting the biggest amount of reaction apart from Márquez, and that was even going back to 2021 when he was just a 16-year-old. So kind of came naturally to him, I guess.
But the fan base was much bigger here than compared to last year. I mean, MotoGP effect is big, right? I mean, he's been on El Hormiguero, you know, the chat, one of the sort of chat shows here in Spain on primetime TV. You know, the profile is on the way up. On the podcast, we've had his crew chief, Paul Trevathan, a couple of times telling us about the Pedro effect. But I managed to catch up with Red Bull GasGas Tech 3 team manager Nico Guillon to explain a little bit about, you know, how Costa's been operating, how he's influenced the team from the inside stuff that we don't necessarily see, as well as a little bit about the technical spec of his RC16. So here are Nico's words. Nico, thank you for joining us on the podcast. It's good to talk to you about Pedro Acosta and the effect he's had on the team this year. First of all, I mean, your heart must have been in your mouth this morning, because that was a pretty scary crash into turn 7. I think, as you said to the media already, not the best way to start the Spanish Grand Prix.
Well, yeah, this is clear. Everything went quite good so far, but this crash due to wet patches all around the track had made it quite difficult for sure. It's a high speed crash, and whatever happened, even if you escape not in June, this is not the best way to start your race day. So I think this has put any doubts in his not any doubts, but had put him a little bit down. And then the rest, starting P10 here in Jerez is not the best thing. This is not an easy circuit to overtake, So you know you're in the middle of the field and you never know what happened. Yesterday it was kind of a miracle that he reached the second position. But this kind of miracle cannot happen every time. So we knew anyway, we knew from already Saturday morning that it was not the best position on the grid. Then he got stuck a little bit at the start. He had a battle with Zarco. Zarco touched him. Anyway, he ended up 18. Then he started his race 18 and he recovered up to the 10th position. Which is in the end is not so bad after all what happened, but for sure when we had almost 3 podiums in a row, you always expect more. But let's not forget he's still a rookie, and a top ten is still a great achievement on the track where everybody has tested a lot. No, every single centimeter of the track, so it's not bad. It's not bad.
I'm not sure if we were correct, but when he crashed yesterday, going for pole position lap, which looked very strong, it was only the second time he had actually fallen since the start of the season. I don't know if that's true or not, but we thought it was just the second accident. But I mean, this morning obviously looked pretty serious, but it's a low moment in the first four races and since the beginning of 2024 when everything's just been going up and up and up.
Yeah, no, this... this crash, I mean, for him, he took it in a part of his head because he knew what happened. It was a wet patch. And, you know, for a rider, the worst thing is not to understand why you crash. So you investigate and you don't understand what happened. Then this stick in your mind. But this morning crash was a scary one, yes. But he knew why. And this, I mean, he clarified. The first thing that he said when once... Inter in the garage was okay, no problem. I know what happened, so we're not gonna talk about this crash anymore. I'm fine. We'll rebuild the bike, and this is not an issue. So no, this is not a major issue.
Nico, what has been Pedro's effect on the team? Because I think also when the deal was made, a part of you must have thought, oh, okay, we have another rookie. Because there's been a process in the last few years where you've had new guys coming into MotoGP and they have to learn so much straight away. But, I mean, Pedro seems to have had the most amazing kind of baptism, if you like. And how has it sort of galvanized the team and made you guys, I don't know, perform on a higher level?
Well, it was not only one more rookie. We knew his career was a kind of a big thing so far. I mean, two titles in 3 years is not easy, and he's one of these really good rookies. So we knew it could be good. To be fair, we all expected him to come because we knew it was one of this special guy. And the day we've heard that he would be with us. We made some inquiries, some interview in the paddock to understand how he is. And everybody told me he's a super nice guy, he's really normal, he's polite. And I have to say, all this is really true. So we were really happy to have him, and we knew that something special could happen. But to be fair, nobody expected him to be at this level. And I think him included, nobody really expected this. The fact is that he really enjoyed this bike. He enjoyed it as much as a Moto3. He told us that he had a lot of fun on the Moto3. Then in Moto2, he struggled and he didn't really like the Moto2, the bike itself, the concept, the Moto2 concept. You cannot adjust everything, and it didn't feel like a proper race bike for him. And as soon as he jumped on the MotoGP, wow, it was a super nice bike. He loved it straight away, and he just has fun. And when you have fun like this, when you enjoy it, you go fast. But it's clear that we expected really good, but not at this level.
Are you surprised more by the talent and the technique, or by the mentality?
Boss, clearly boss. His ability to ride a bike fast is unbelievable. The way he understands the thing by himself is really impressive. his comments are accurate, and he's talking like an experienced rider. Honestly, it's been 20 years I'm in this paddock, and I know what I mean. But really, when he talks, it's really like a very experienced rider. So this surprised us. And his personality, the way he is, the way he likes to build a team around him, the way he behaves to every single person in the team, not only the mechanics, but everyone, is just show how he has been educated and what his real mentality. And he's a real good guy. He's a fast rider and he's a good guy.
Is it a bit depressing also reaching a certain age yourself and seeing a 19-year-old be so good at something? I mean, we hate these kids, right, in some way?
Well, no, we love him. Huh? as a human being, no, we love him. Being fast in this paddock, this is the target of every single rider. This is the target of every crew, every team. So, yeah, no, we just open the eyes and we enjoy the show.
Lastly, Nico, we're talking just before the first in-season test, first one-day test of the year. Can you tell us a bit about the bike Pedro's riding? I mean, you throw in new parts at him now. Is he ready to really get involved with prototype, you know, aspects of the motorcycle? How is the spec of the RC16 that he's riding?
The bike is. First of all, is exactly the same as the KTM bike. So Gas and KTM are on a similar level, and being at this level and being at this position of the championship, clearly is going to be involved into the development of the bike. Tomorrow we have a private test, and I wouldn't be surprised that he've got some special part, but that he would be one of the first to try some special parts. So clearly he will be involved into the bike development.
Nico, thanks ever so much for your time. I hope we can speak to you again later in the season.
Yeah, no problem. See you later.
Guys, the same weekend was reaching the end of the AMA Supercross series. I can't actually remember where the race was. It might have been in Philadelphia. But yeah, Jet Lawrence is a real close contest going down to the wire there. And one of the big names you'll see in AMA Supercross is Fly Racing. We're lucky enough to be backed by the same company here on the podcast. 25 years of Fly Racing. They have a fantastic off-road Formula S helmet. I wear it. Actually, not the S version, but the previous version. For ventilation, comfort is the best you can get. So check out Fly Racing for some fantastic apparel protection and riding gear for the road as well, not just off-road. Let's move on to our winners and losers. Dave, who was your winner from the Grand Prix of Spain?
My winner from the Grand Prix of Spain has to be Pekka Bagnaia, because he won the Grand Prix of Spain. But not just the Grand Prix, it was the way that he did it. I mean, for all the reasons we discussed earlier, he needed this, he did it, he held off Mark, the whole thing.
Was it his, in your opinion, was it his best ever win?
Gosh, that's a really...
It's got to be, right?
What, here or generally?
No, ever.
Top two, three maybe, but perhaps definitely the most important win, because he needed this one. He needed to get his championship back on track. So yeah, absolutely.
No, I disagree. I think 2022 in Sepang, you know, when, you know, just the pressure was on and he really had to make that champ, you know, to head to Valencia with an easier job to win the championship. That was a big, big, big race. But I, in terms of even the Spanish Grand Prix, I thought his victory over Quartararo 2 years ago, the first win by 0.6 of a second, was also kind of a showcase of perfection, really. I mean, he was not rattled at all by Aguirre, who was one of the best riders around this circuit at the time. But
the difference between Quartararo and Marquez is that Mark was more than willing to stuff it up the inside and try to intimidate him, and Pekka was not intimidated, and I think that's what makes the difference.
Now I'm going to ask you a winner after mine, because it's a man we've ignored very much on this podcast so far, somewhat unjustifiably. I'm going to choose a little series of winners. First, Miguel Oliveira, I think his best result so far on the new RSGP as part of the Trackhouse Racing team, was running as high as 6, I think, at one point.
He was, yeah.
So a really good race by the Portuguese.
He hits the wall at the end.
Yeah. and to take that result where there's probably the most intense speculation yet about his future and the future of the riders on that roster for 2025 was particularly affirming. And as always, Miguel and his dry sense of humor is a treat in the debriefs. Do not ask this man a silly question. That's all I will warn anybody who's wanting to get into MotoGP journalism.
Cut me down to size a few times this weekend, and rightly so.
Colin Vea as well.
Colin Vea. That was genuinely one of the best Moto3 rides I've seen, because he was in control all the way through and he managed it all the time. And you saw in Parc Fermé when David Muñoz was being interviewed, he was broken.
Well, he was disgusted, I think. He was like, this is my Grand Prix in my crowd. I live down the road. Yeah, How dare you come here?
He was completely exhausted. And Colin looked like he'd just finished the warm-up lap and was thinking, right, well, I'm just warmed up, so we should. Are we ready to go yet?
Got lucky. Yeah, wouldn't have won it if Alonso hadn't crashed.
But that is possibly true.
I'm joking, of course.
And we had a row of Dutchmen in the press conference getting all excited as well, Neil. So it was
a great ride from Colin.
And lastly, a quick nod to Joe Roberts. I'm going to promo him now because, Neil, you've got a great interview with him coming up in the podcast this week, which we're going to run. But, another third podium in a row now for Roberts. That makes him the first, I thought, Fram Wild, Dorna's, what's her official job title?
Communications manager or something.
Yes. Apologies, Fran, for not getting it. We'll try and amend that in the notes somewhere. But, just basically whopping out the statistics that, Joe's the first American leader of a championship since Nicky Hayden. He's got 69 points in the championship as well. And it's all looking really rosy for him to finally vault out of this category and get into the premier class next year. So, props to Roberts. And I think he was even a little frustrated that he couldn't win the race. So,
tune good, in on Wednesday.
Yeah. A good streak of success so far. Neil, your winner.
My winner was another man that we haven't talked about, and he was on the podium, Marco Bezzecchi. Bez is back, it would appear. And it was a stellar weekend, really. We were sort of worried that he was going to go down the Enea Bastianini route of seriously underwhelming after a brilliant year of sustained excellence. And his comments aboard the GP23 at the start of this season were worryingly similar to Bastianini's comments at the start of last year on the same bike. He seems to have turned it round. He had a massive crash yesterday at turn 7, which we sort of missed among all the chaos going on in the sprint. But he produced a really, really assured performance. Yes, he wasn't quite on the level of the top two, but third is a great result, straight back into the mix. I caught up with his crew chief, Matteo Flamini, after the race. We were sort of under the impression that it was engine braking and the nature of the GP23's engine that was causing his issues entering the turn. Flamini was actually telling me that the main cause was this Michelin rear tire that they have this weekend, just the extra grip and how that was pushing the front and really not allowing him to enter the turn with the kind of the aggression that he normally was showing in his better days last year. So, it's easy to forget just how impressive Bezzecchi was at certain moments last year. And I thought this was great. This is a sign that, he could be a force this year and someone that we've kind of almost discounted.
Sorry, Marco, just to move off the topic for a moment. But Dave, the subject of tyres is flummoxing a few people still, because while the chatter issue vanished for some riders, it was quite prevalent for others. Brad Binder in particular, I think on the left side of the rear, had quite a lot of graining or chatter or vibration problems. That's something I think KTM are going to try to look into tomorrow at the test. But that really nullified Binder's threat. He finished sixth after a close three-way fight, I think, for fourth place involving Alex Marquez. Who was the other rider in that group?
Bastianini.
Yeah, so... Yeah, that's still part of the conundrum.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, Jack Miller was also saying that he was actually explaining really well that this new tyre, it's a new tyre, it's a different compound. Basically, the compound has a little bit more support, so it should be a little bit harder, but it isn't a little bit harder. It has the same grip as as the old tyre. So it's aimed to be more consistent, but what is happening is it's basically changing the way that it's changing the way the rear grips. So the bikes have been designed around the old tyre, and there's a world of difference between front and front tire is everything to a ride, absolutely everything. You change anything on the front tire, it messes everything up. Rear tires, there's a lot more tolerance, but this, the way that it is gripping and then releasing, is sort of upsetting people. What they're trying to find the way to get the tire to, you know, to allow it to slide smoothly and dig in. And what's happening is it's not sliding smoothly, it's sort of bouncing a little bit. It's sliding and letting go, or it's gripping and sliding and gripping and sliding, gripping and sliding, and that is generating a sort of a vibration in the rear wheel, and that is where everyone is struggling with. I think tomorrow is going to be really, really important, the test, but I think there's going to be a few more races before they sort of finally get it nailed down. And again, one of the reasons I rate Jorge Martin so highly is because he was the first rider to identify this. He was the first person to have it at the Qatar test.
On to losers from Jerez, I'm going to go first, and not through ability or judgment, but more through circumstance, I'm going to nominate both Jack Miller and Fabio Quartararo, the two previous winners at this Grand Prix before Pecco Bagnaia started his run of success. We're talking about a catalogue of incidents of race direction, but it was a real catalogue of woe for the Australian. Everything from little glitches in the pit box, delaying his time in qualification, and then just being wiped out by Franco Morbidelli, a really miserable Grand Prix, and things not looking good for Jack. He said in his debrief that he must have walked under a ladder or run over a black cat or something, because it's
he probably ran over a black cat while driving underneath a ladder.
And Neil, I mean, you said, you know, Jack, have you ever been at this base point in your career? And he said, well, actually, there's been quite a few low moments. So it's Miller's having to go into the rut again and pull himself out. And I'm pretty sure he will, because, I mean, he looked on it in warm-up. I mean, he was like second fastest, and evidently the speed is there, but he's still not quite at that peak level with the KTM. And then Fabio Quartararo, after that resurgence yesterday in the sprint, didn't get the start, just running outside the top 15, and just looked like a repeat of the dire Yamaha situation we've seen so far this year. Neil?
Yes, so bad that, the bike was so nervous and so kind of twitchy and aggressive, he was having to manhandle it. It gave him arm pump, and that's never a good sign, something that Alex Rins was also experiencing.
Yeah, exactly. This is the trouble. When the bikes are difficult to ride, when things are not going smoothly, you're grabbing hold of it, you're being really stiff on the bike, and you're putting a lot of force into it, and then that's when you start to get arm pump. You it's a lot more tiring.
Alessio Spargaro was my loser. You mentioned it earlier, crashed out of 16th place, he was 17th. He was trying to pass Johann Zarco. Just the fact that he was that far down was crazy. On Friday, it was one of those Fridays where everything was brilliant. He said he was faster than anyone else on the medium rear tire, and that the potential was excellent. But Aprilia kind of got their strategy wrong in qualifying. Aleix didn't get a good start, mired in the pack. And yeah, one of those weekends that we saw last year where Aprilia go from world beaters to no hopers in the space of one race weekend. That kind of consistency doesn't make you challenge for championships. And it's difficult for Spargaro because he's obviously riding at this moment, trying to decide whether he continues next year or not. And I think performances like this are going to see him veer on the side of retirement, which is bad for him, obviously. So, I thought it was a pretty miserable weekend overall.
Yeah, situations like this as well is what we feared and what we were questioning about Maverick Viñales as well for the championship. And, you know, Maverick evidently had the speed again this weekend, but starts and race situations just didn't play into his hands. I still think it was better than what we saw last year at the low moments. But, it was ninth place for Maverick today.
Behind Miguel Oliveira.
Yeah. That was not
Maverick,
really
the random number generator again.
Who was your loser, Dave?
My loser, I did almost pick Maverick just to wind you up, Ad. Oh, but my loser has to be Luca Marini, because he finished behind Stefan Bradl. Now, last year there were some KTM riders who finished behind Danny Pedrosa, but Danny Pedrosa is really good. And Stefan Bradl is a very good test rider, but he is just nowhere near as competitive as Danny Pedrosa. So for Luca Marini to finish the race behind, the fact that he didn't come up for his debrief after the race because he was in an important technical meeting is also not really encouraging. And he has just looked completely lost, really. And I'm starting to think, if he's spending sort of, you know, his weekdays just counting his money and trying not to think of the misery of every race weekend.
That was almost like a protest result, wasn't it? It was like, you know, the bike's so shit, I'm going to finish behind, you know, the one that's barely raced, well, hasn't raced, you know, that's still in development. But also, I wonder if we might be ending for some sort of Johann Zarco KTM situation where, you know, Marini says my career is more important for me, and, you know.
Yeah, but
where does he go? But then
exactly, Marini doesn't have the credit that Zarco did at that point in time. Like, we were still remembering the Zarco who'd been outstanding on the Tech 3 Yamaha. And so when he got halfway through his first KTM season, he still had a lot of credit. Now, Luca Marini is a very good rider, but he hasn't shown the kind of promise and talent and potential that we thought Zarco had.
Exactly. Yeah. Plus, he's a more considered figure. He's more level-headed than Zarco, and he's not pissing everyone off like Zarco was in KTM in 2019. Yeah. So, I don't think it's going to happen like that.
Well, guys, that's pretty much it from Sunday in the evening here at Jerez. Dave, we're covering the test tomorrow. So, guys, if you're a Patreon subscriber, watch out for that one. We'll try and do a little wrap up. We'll also mention in the Wednesday show that we hope to record, of course, midweek and get it published as well, where we'll tackle a few other subjects. We've asked you for your questions. So, if there's anything from the Grand Prix here in Spain that you want to know, then just send it through to us. We also attended quite an interesting roundtable between KTM and Mobile One. About sort of their lubricants and their development of fuels and stuff. And there were some interesting things in there. So we'll chat about that as well in the podcast.
Lubricants are a lot more interesting than you think.
Yes, especially when you combine them with horniness and wet patches. So there we go.
Your mind out of the gutter.
And of course, as we mentioned, we've got Neil's cool interview with Joe Roberts. So thanks ever so much for listening in, everybody. Thank you to Renthor, to Fly Racing, and of course to KTM, big backers on the podcast. We couldn't do it without their support. We'll be back during the week.